Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Chris Temple, and Chris, anybody who is wondering about these markets, I think can just listen to that market close that you and I recorded on Friday. So I want to focus in this editorial on this concept that you have brought up a couple times, and that is this fight still that is going on between the U.S. and China. Things seem to be getting better at the tail end of last year with a phase one deal done, and that optimism was carrying into the markets. But now that everyone is very distracted by what's going on with COVID-19, fact of the matter is things between the U.S. and China have really deteriorated. Please share with us some of the factors that you're watching when it comes to this ongoing battle.
Well, look, first of all, Corey, we need to remember that the chief justification in the first place for the late year rally last year for not only U.S. stocks, but for most risk assets in the world that carried through into at least January or so of this year was this so-called phase one trade deal. And the belief being that the U.S. and China were going to step back from a more intractable, longer-term trade and geostrategic war, such as it was, and that we would see less pressure on trade flows and things like that. President Trump at the time ballyhooed how farmers, this was so wonderful for farmers, they're all going to have to go out and buy more land and grow more crops. What are they doing today? They're destroying crops and in danger of losing their land. So that, of course, wasn't all a result of the phase one deal, but it does show that since that time, and China essentially now having the ability to treat this as a dead letter to the point where President Trump finally last week had to admit a tiny bit that, gee, maybe China's not going to follow through and buy all this $250 billion worth of stuff after all. Well, no shit, Sherlock. I don't know where you've been the last couple of months, except trying to pump up the markets with a bunch of hopium that you know is not true, if you have any sense at all. So, you know, finally, the markets are waking up to the fact that the primary bullish factor of late 2019 and into early this year has been obliterated. It's that phase one deal is a dead letter. And that's bad enough, Corey, but what's going to get worse is that as pressure on both countries continues to intensify, because economies are reeling, markets are in way more trouble than what the average person understands, the tendency is going to be not to try and patch things up, but they're going to get worse still. And especially when you consider, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with this, but when you consider that President Trump will correctly, as much as he's mishandled parts of this, be running for re-election on the idea that nobody else stood up to China, including China Joe, who is his main opponent. But, you know, darn it, he's going to stand up to China, and he is standing up to China. So between now and Election Day, the idea that things are going to get smoothed over is a fantasy. So I think markets are slowly waking up to the realization that, again, this primary bullish factor for the markets is gone, and that when you add to that the continued fallout from the Wuhan virus, and that things are only going to limp very, very slowly back in a positive direction as far as economic activity, there's still other shoes to drop. It explains why about the time the stock market just about hit dead on the maximum level you could expect it to retrace in this first big bear market rally, why things are weakening again.
So, Chris, when Trump was going after China last year, there are still people out there on China's side, in a sense, saying that Trump is going after him too much. He needs to have priorities elsewhere, yada, yada, yada. But right now, there's a larger contingent that is against China because of the virus and the way that they handled it. Do you see, even if Trump can't get a deal done, at least the fact that he is going after China helping that case and keeping it even more relevant, almost enabling him to continue to take a hard stance and maybe not get anything done?
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, at this point in time, it's virtually impossible to think of any kind of a deal or resurrection of parts of this phase one or anything being done. There's a lot more I talk about in my issue that'll be out this next weekend about some of the things China was already doing, showing that it never intended to comply with this deal in the first place. So, look, President Trump, as I alluded to, this is one of his winning arguments for re-election. He was talking about China's duplicity and all of the rest of this stuff and the need to bring back supply chains to the U.S., et cetera, before it was fashionable more broadly to do so. Now, because of the Wuhan virus and the average American who maybe some of them hate Trump so much that, you know, they don't want to listen to any of this. Now, a few of them maybe are warming up. Gee, this guy personally is a guy that I wouldn't have as my neighbor, wouldn't want as my neighbor, but, you know, as odious as he is, in some ways, I guess he was right, because now, besides cell phones and sneakers, we've learned the hard way that we're depending on China for way more than that, even when it comes to some of the things we need to fight or treat this virus. So he's got, that's one of his biggest winning arguments in running for re-election. And if he handles himself right, he will annihilate Biden, all else being equal, on China, because after all, it was the Obama and Biden administration that enabled, and they weren't the only ones, but they enabled a lot of the stuff China got away with that Trump has now called out and said, we're not going to do this anymore. So it's good in that sense.
So, Chris, this might be hard to answer because, well, we just don't know when stuff will get back to normal. But assuming that we are in the state of lockdown for many more months, do you see Trump upping any of these tariffs or any of these attack plans that he used last year against China?
Well, what he said last week that, and I'm glad you asked that specifically because we may not have gotten to this, but there was talk in the last several days of things such as the U.S. simply repudiating the $1.1 trillion some odd debt that China directly owns as far as treasury debt is a means to punish them for the Wuhan virus and as reparations, if you will. And that was a term that they came up with. I didn't pick that out of out of thin air. The same thing has been mused about previously because the U.S. owns a lot of bonds from prior to the Communist Revolution in China, which we've never collected on and never will. So to their credit, and properly so within the context of everything else that needs to be worried about, both the president, more so his chief economic court jester Larry Kudlow, came out at the end of the week and said, absolutely not. That is not on the table. We are not going to do anything to jeopardize the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, nor the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency, by doing anything like that. But both of them did add to your question that not right now necessarily, because things are very shaky still, but down the road, if you take them at their word of the end of last week, the Trump administration fully expects that it will impose new tariffs or find some other ways to financially punish China for what they claim China has done. So there will be more coming that will make this ongoing trade and new Cold War, which it truly is for a lot of other reasons with China, that much more intractable. And I think it's going to be a big negative for the market going forward that everybody until just a little bit in the last few days was ignoring.
Yeah, they really were. And I think a lot of people still are ignoring it. But the longer this drags on, you know, maybe it will come to the forefront again. Now, do you see other countries choosing sides in terms of maybe more so switching over to the U.S. sides and putting more pressure on China, or on the flip side, choosing China and causing even more of this global divide?
You know, a lot already have chosen our side. And I don't want to say that's our side. That's overly simplistic, Corey, because a lot of countries have got a bone to pick with China. One of the things that would be a whole discussion in and of itself is China's new Silk Road initiatives, and they're trying to spread their reach, their tentacles, their economic power all over the world. It's fairly well known from people who follow this that they've been active in Africa, in South America, in tying up resources and sucking countries into debt. You know, one of the infamous stories that I saw firsthand in Ecuador was one of the mistakes that former President Correa made, who I otherwise am a huge fan of, let China come in, build a new hydroelectric project that's a piece of garbage, but for which Ecuador owes $2+ billion to China. They've done this all over the world. A lot of countries, even before this current crisis, mm-hmm. were starting to push back, saying, hey, I mean, and to them, this is worse than the Fed or the U.S. banking system printing money and impressing everybody into long-term serfdom based on money that they create out of thin air. China has not only done this very same thing in trying to get a lot of countries that they want to have hegemony over in generations to come, but they've impressed them in a debt by you know, subterfuge, by building garbage and all this kind of stuff, and some people are starting to cry foul. You know, an interesting part of this could be, were it not for the maniacs that run this country and our intelligence services, and especially this Russiagate hoax that the Democrat Party, for partisan purposes, has been pushing for a while. You know, the swing here could be Russia. Russia is much more culturally and in every other way in tune with the West. And, you know, this is a whole different discussion, Corey, but the reasons why we have continued, for the most part, to ostracize Russia and drive them towards a marriage of convenience with China is one of the great geopolitical blunders of our time. We should be allied with them and everybody else and truly isolate China, which really is the bad actor on the world stage today. And more people see that.
So then, Chris, how do you see this playing out? Not necessarily in terms of the tensions, because I think that tensions will still be high, and I personally don't think that any significant or any sort of trade deal will be signed. It sounds like you agree with that. But in terms of the markets, right now markets, yes, still very distracted by what's going on with COVID-19, but do you see some sort of buy or some sort of sell, I guess I should say, come into the markets this year? Like, how big of a factor is this to pay attention to for investors?
Well, it's going to be a big factor because here's what you've got right now. And I talked about this when we were leading up in fits and starts to this phase one deal. President Trump, and look, I give him credit for wanting to do something to fix this situation. Has he been perfect? No, but nobody's perfect. So don't be telling me again, folks, that I just dump on Trump, because I don't. I call things as I see them. I have since day one of this man's presidency. But he has been caught between two very opposed forces within this country who more often than not are on the same page, but on the issue of China couldn't be farther apart. And that is Wall Street and the financial community that never wanted this trade war, that through their different mouthpieces in the media have attacked Trump over waging this trade war, as they call it, and et cetera. They just want the free flow of goods and money with no restrictions. On the other side, you've got the military industrial complex in a deep state that essentially wants to destroy China as the modern day chief global rival to the U.S. And the dangerous thing right now is that the Wuhan virus has tilted things back in favor of the deep state and the military people and away from the pragmatists and Wall Street, which Trump by nature leans toward in the first place, as he proved by even signing that joke. The phase one deal was a joke before all of this made it a dead letter anyway. And I said it at the time, at the end of last year. So the danger is that with the hawks in charge of this narrative again, and with China feeding that, I mean, it was 3 or 4 days ago, China bragged that one of their ships kicked a U.S. warship out of the South China Sea. Over the weekend, China's sole reliable ally in the world, such as it is, North Korea, fired on South Korean troops across the demilitarized zone for the first time in quite a few years, now that Fat Boy seems to be back in circulation and away from his vacation or convalescence or whatever. And so, you know, you could see the military and foreign policy element negatively added to the whole economic thing really fast on its present trajectory. And here again, to the extent that the markets weren't paying any attention at all until maybe late last week to the whole breakdown with China to begin with, where economics and trade are concerned, we may get a really big smack across the head if these military things start to become more numerous.
All right, Chris. Very interesting. I just wanted to bring this point up to everybody that maybe thought that things were improving between the U.S. and China. They are not, but hey, even some of the headlines and other people now going after China because of the way they handled the coronavirus is, I think, leading more people to back Trump on maybe whatever else he's going to do. Hopefully not just using tariffs, because that is a pretty tough policy, but hey, we don't know how this is all going to play out, but it's just another kind of cloud, I think, hanging over these markets. Chris, thanks for your time today. I'll post a link to your website below. Have a great rest of your day.